freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
Jabe Huard just punched me in the kidney.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines studio.
On Seattle Sports.
We're going to see you on the interview.
Doesn't really work that way, Sherm. This is a show that has my name on it.
It kind of does, though.
Brought to you by Simply Seattle.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
Hello!
Hello!
Well, again, not a perfect weekend for the Mariners. Not everything was great, and we've spent a lot of time this morning on the strikeouts and some of the offensive issues. And I appreciate Scott's approach to it. He's recognized it. He called it out. He said, we know, but also said, look, we're 2-2, and we still believe in this club and where it's going. Mm-hmm. So that's the big picture. But the thing that happened this weekend that I hope has the most long-term effect on who this team is what we saw in the way the game ended on Saturday.
Game-winning run at third, and a pitch. Line drive, right center field, ball game! Julio Rodriguez gets it done! Yes, sir! And the Mariners win it! 4-3, Rojas scores, and that's your ball game!
Guys, everything else is sort of neither here nor there. The strikeouts hopefully will turn back around. Players tend to become who they've always been in their career. And so they likely won't strike out at a 45 per four game clip. That's not likely to continue. But Julio Rodriguez, over the first 2 years of his career, has been on the verge of becoming an MVP guy. And the one thing that we talked about last year, and again, people took it as a Julio criticism. I don't mean it that way, but was, hey, in the big moments, he didn't have his best stuff. Mm-hmm. He didn't come up with a bunch of those big hits when they really needed him to win games. If he had last year, the team probably makes the playoffs, and we have a very different conversation about who they are, what they accomplished, and what this offseason would have been about. So to see him do it in what was really his first big chance to do so this year, mm-hmm. I thought was incredibly important. Julio won that game by coming up big in that moment. And
well, now the guys did set the table before him,
right?
I mean, you are down 3-1. You didn't have heads down. You didn't sit there and go, woe is us. We just lost again. So they had to set the table before him. So I don't want to diminish that because the guys did.
I'm not saying those things didn't happen. I'm saying that long term, what's most important is that Julio did have that moment. He showed he can do it.
Yep.
It may mean that he doesn't get to hit in that moment next time. If you remember last year, they got to the point, like early in the year, they were walking Julio in those spots. By the end, they were like, meh, let's just pitch to him.
Yep.
And that to me was like the biggest insult of the whole year for Julio. They didn't have to pitch to him there.
Mm-mm.
One out, first and third. Like, you could not pitch to him. You could choose mm-hmm. to walk him and take your chances with Polanco.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, they allowed a guy who'd never thrown a major league pitch before to come in and face Julio.
Yeah, it was interesting. The night before, right, he's in a similar kind of leverage situation. And I think the term that they love to use is pass the baton, man. If you don't get that pitch to hit, don't be selfish. Don't try to do too much with it. Right. Don't pop it up. Don't strike out. If you don't get that pitch to hit, then and they're thrown away and they're thrown away. And it was down and away. And it was so much of the same game plan. Right. There's times the intricacies of baseball we miss so much. We have no clue. And so maybe after the fact. But then there's other times where your eye can see like, oh, OK, I see what they're doing here. They're doing what they did last year to him in these leverage spots, trying to get him to chase and down and away and chase spin down and away. And he wouldn't do it. And he passed the baton. And kind of same thing in that situation. You could see the game plan was still there. Hey, man, make sure, you know, you throw spin away and attack down and away and throw it out of the zone. And he may chase. And he didn't. And then when he got his pitch to hit, he didn't miss it. And my gosh, how good that must have felt. Of all the boxes that dude has checked for 2 years,
right,
to finally be able to check a game winner and to have then, geez, did the fire department spray him down?
I've never seen anything like it.
Is that why he was soaked toe-to-toe?
Have you ever seen anyone that wet on a field for any reason? It's insane. I've never seen it.
I think Jen Mueller would like to have a word. I think she's been soaked a
not
time
that
or
way.
Two.
And not like that. Jen yes. has never looked like she jumped into a pool with all of her clothes on.
I don't know.
That's what Julio looked like. Scott really appreciated the approach.
We've seen him have a lot of opportunities. I think we all lived through it last year and the struggles he went through when everybody expects your best player to come through all the time. It's hard. But if you do slow it down and control your emotions like you did tonight, great things can happen. That's not going to be the last walk-off hit he gets, that's for sure. But I did not know it was his first. But certainly a different he's a different animal right now. He really is. He's gained a lot of, I guess, confidence, trust in himself in those moments. And you go through it and have some success doing it a certain way, you know, it ain't going to leave him, that's for sure.
Yeah, I would have lost the bet, by the way. I don't know about you and Moore and Justin, but if you would have, you know, bet like in that moment, like, hey, how many, you know, walk off, how many times has he been chased down in the stadium? How many times? Yeah. I would have bet for sure at some point his rookie year, not early, but at some point, or in August of last year where he hit 670.
Right? Sheesh. So he had the big game tying home run against the Braves.
Yeah.
But no walk off winners until Saturday. So that was great, honestly. And just, you know, any win is good. Mm-hmm. A comeback win is sometimes a little bit sweeter. Seeing them do it the way they did with Rayleigh's, you know, speed and aggressiveness on the base paths, and then Julio's ability to just find a way. He went the other way.
He did.
Went to right field, went to right center. It's funny how many things we talked about in the last couple days leading up to opening day ended up kind of showing itself, mm-hmm. whether it was Dylan Moore with his pinch hit home run, Julio going to right center, right? The bullpen, like all of these things that we've been discussing really seem to show themselves over the course of just the first four games of the season.
Yeah, well, let's just be careful about the we pronoun. I think you had commented on a few of those, so we'll give Salky a little.
No, I don't mean it like that.
He's an elitist, but we'll give him a little credit when credit is due.
Wow.
Yeah, a couple of those things
I
absolutely
did
transpire.
But it's not like I said Julio's going to have a win by hitting it to right center. I was just saying one of the things I love is when we get to watch Julio hit the ball to right center.
Yes.
And in that big moment, for him to do the thing that maybe sets him apart as much as anything else, I don't know. I thought that's a really, really good sign for the future.
It's a very, very, very bearisome small sample size.
It is.
Okay, it is. But he did hit it the other way a lot.
Like I
know. He looked at his spray chart over these four games. So, and maybe some of that, again, is just not getting a fastball to really eat and pull and just let it totally rip. And they've got to do something. Got to do something about that.
It did sort of have that, like, hey, if we're going to talk about Geno Smith and whether or not he can do it in the big moment, and then he does, we better spend some time on it. Yep. And I guess I kind of put this in that category of like, hey, if we're going to talk about how Julio will ultimately be measured, of course it's different because baseball, your stats are just going to be so much more meaningful to judging who you are as a player.
Yep.
But these moments are what start to kind of put you over the top in what I think will eventually be an MVP kind of year for Julio.
Yes, kind of just like football players when you line up on the other side, Saul, can you kind of see it, man? And there are a lot of images from my lifetime sitting under center and looking across the other side. I remember my very first NFL experience. Get thrown in the game late in Miami. We're getting killed. John had a tough day, a tough outing. I come in the game. Big brother's on the other sidelines. So I know a bunch of these Dolphin guys, and Zach Thomas is looking at me, and Brock Marion is laughing at me like, you got no shot, kid. Trace Johnson is on the edge, and Buckner and all these big dudes, and I could just feel them. Like, you could just, man, I can flash back 20 years and still, you know, feel that. Your peers notice this. For Julio, I think those peers will notice this. Yeah. Ooh, okay, if this kid's now doing this, man, in these leveraged moments.
Yeah, next time we're going to pitch around him. We're just going to take our chances with Polanco's got one hit on the season.
Probably.
Let's do that. Yeah. All right, coming up, we'll give you guys everything you need to know, including what should be a fantastic sports afternoon and into the evening. Stick around. You'll hear more about it next. Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Bit of an up and down weekend at T-Mobile. They did win 2 out of 3 this weekend, leading to a series split with the Red Sox. As we said, the good was Friday and Saturday, where both pitchers were on it. Kirby, filthy, and a combined shutout, rather, on Friday night. And not a lot of offense in that game, but they did get the one big hit they needed. That was JP's.
0-1 to JP. Swing on, high drive, right field. There it goes. We got a breakthrough. That baby stays fair, and the Mariners have a 1-0 lead. JP Crawford. Boy, did he give that baby a ride. Right down the line. It was fair by about 10 feet. No doubt about her. 1-0 Mariners here in the sixth.
Elite bat flip, by the way, from JP on that one.
Yeah,
looking at the dugout, giving him a big nod, and then the big bat flip to go with it.
Yep.
He gets such great extension. You notice that on the home run, they had that angle from kind of the third base side. It reminded me of when you watch especially LPGA golfers and you just see the amount of extension they get on their follow through. That's what it looked like from JP there. He smoked that ball and then played a big role in the win on Saturday as well. Keeping that line moving, contact play and allowing Luke Raley to score.
Kind of fun when you see a lefty in that just home run swing spot, right? I don't know. Righties, it didn't feel like you have that same down and in that lefties get for some reason. I don't know. I'm sure you do. But from Will Clark
different.
To Darryl Strawberry to, to those lefties through the years, that obviously the kid parked many of those in the right field bleachers with that same just beautiful swing and extension. They needed that one, man. They needed that big hit. You could feel it there. Yeah. And Dave Sims, he's almost chomping at those words like, come on, you know, like, let's just get that one hit. Kirby's been such nails. Find a way on a Friday night, you know, in the City Connect jerseys to get it done. And they did.
That was Friday. Saturday was Julio's walk-off and another great pitching performance from Logan Gilbert. But Sunday, right back to some of those offensive struggles, right? They mustered just one run in a 5-1 loss. So Friday night, one run. Saturday, one run when you weren't gifted a runner on second base. Sunday, one run. That's not going to get it done. Scott knows.
You know, we need to do a better job there as well. It's, you know, handling the off-speed pitches. We have been chasing a little bit more than normal and haven't gotten the ball in play like I thought we would. So, again, not our best series. You look up, we split it for a club that I think is – we have a good offensive team. We just – have not gotten it going yet.
I forget which cut it's in, but he does say essentially, Brock, that, hey, we knew this was a problem. We went out of our way to try to fix it. And so far, it hasn't happened yet. But he believes that it will. They're only four games into the season. Long way to go. But that's something that's going to need to change.
Yeah, 45 strikeouts in four games. Not tenable.
Right. That's for sure. Just not going to get it done. Cleveland in for the first of three tonight. Emerson Hancock will get the ball for the first time. Guardians, they did go 3 of 4, but they did it in Oakland. So how much does it really count? Well, it counts in the standings.
How those Astros do, by the way?
They're 0-4. They got swept by the Yankees and Juan Soto, who had himself a pretty nice start to his Yankee career.
Here's the second thing you need
UConn,
to know.
UConn, Purdue, Alabama, NC State, yawn. What I really want to talk about is the women's side of the tournament, which has just been fun. And today is going to be great, Brock. Oof. The rematch of last year's championship game. Iowa on one side, LSU on the other. There's so many storylines to that matchup in particular. There's some other good ones, right? The girl at USC is really good. Bukers at UConn really good. Like, there's some really, really good players and big time star talent in the women's side of the tournament.
Yep.
But these two teams seem to just represent so much and such different paths that it's just become a fantastic rivalry.
Yeah, and then throw in Haley Van Litt, the local kid that's down there playing point guard for LSU. Throw in Kim Mulkey. I mean, the beauty of it is this, you know, there's times you feel like some storylines are just fabricated or you're trying to make something of it. Not in this case. Not women's basketball now, man. Not with Dawn Staley's undefeated crew at South Carolina. Not with Gina Auriemma, who just continues to do it year after year, and they'll play tonight. Not with some of the young stars. And Juju down there in L.A., she's Kobe-esque, man. Yeah. She is an absolute competitive killer.
Watch some of her this weekend, too.
Yeah, and then LSU and Iowa got a lot of history, and it is going to be some must-see TV tonight.
Mm-hmm, that's for sure. Angel Reese asked about that rivalry and what it means on the court.
I think people just take it like we hate each other. Like, me and Caitlin Clark don't hate each other. Like, I want everybody to understand that it's just a super competitive game, and, like, when I get between those lines, like, we're not friends. We're not buddies. I'm going to talk trash to you. I'm going to do whatever it takes to get in your head the whole entire game. But I don't think people really realize that. And that's fine. I'll take the villain role. I'll take the hit for it. But I know we're going women's basketball. And if this is the way we're going to do it, then this is the way we're going to do it. You like it or you don't.
I kind of love this, man. I like her. I like Caitlin. If it was possible for me to root for both teams today, I would do so. My kids are all in on Caitlin Clark, so I get a sense that's where we're going to be going. But, man, both those teams are fun, and South Carolina's better than any of them. Yep. So this is going to be a really fun last couple days of the women's tournament.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
as for the Kraken, it's not going well, man. They lose again over the weekend, 3-0 at home to the Stars. They won just two games in March with 12 home games. That's not what you're looking for. But we're going to see Shane Wright. He will be back in action tonight. He gets called up against San Jose. He can play in a total of 7 games, I guess, without burning a year of his entry-level contract.
So is that part of the reason why we didn't see him?
I would assume so, but honestly, like, I don't know.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's a good enough reason, to be honest with you.
Dave Hackstall fighting for his job in these final 9 games?
I don't know. I mean, you know me, I've been wondering about Hackstall's job since year one. So yeah. I every time it seems like he doesn't have the team, they come out and play really hard for him and kind of do some. So I get the sense they really like him. I don't think he's lost them, but something has not clicked, whether it's his fault or not. I'm not sure we really know the answer to that today. But yeah, Shane Wright. Yeah, Brock, now I don't want them to waste the year of contract control. But because it's not worth it for 7 or 8 games. But if he had been here for the last month, yeah, then it probably would have been worth it.
It is so remarkable to me that even, you know, for things that just cross over every sport, that you need your young guns to emerge, right? This was obviously an expansion franchise, but the Beniers, the Shane Wrights, your top draft picks, your young, you know, studs. You got to hit. You got to hit on them in the NFL. You got to hit on them in baseball. You got to hit them on the NHL, right? And, you know, if you want to be homegrown and have your young studs, I'd sure like to see maybe in this final stretch of the 9 games of this year, Beniers and Shane Wright get an opportunity and take advantage of it.
All right, that's everything you need to know. Every hour we do that, a 1:15, and just give you a chance to, you know what's going on in the world of sports from people that really know, like me. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know. Yes. I know what's going on in the world.
Especially your men's college basketball. You are in. You are totally in.
Not,
you and Lefko, just passionate.
I have
just
not been
so
interested.
Emotional.
Dude, I haven't been interested in years now.
Yeah.
And yet you ask, like, you bring up some of those old like, I saw that Iowa State was playing, and I was like, where's Jess Settles? Like, what's going on? Right?
Sure.
I saw Colgate was in it this year. I'm like, where's a Donald Foyle?
So like, I remember the rosters of all of these old teams.
Yeah, I can't do it.
Abdul Abdel Nabi. Remember him?
Yeah, of course I remember. Abdel Nabi.
Yes.
But Brock.
Cherokee.
The women's game, Cherokee Parks.
Yeah.
The women's game right now
is
fascinating.
It is, man. It is. It is so feisty. It is so real. You have characters that are unafraid. Right? Like Kim Mulkey, lover, hater. Like she is who she is. Angel Reese, lover, hater. Caitlin Clark, lover, hater. Like they are who they are. Gina Auriemma, like Dawn Staley. Like there are just characters in the leaders of these programs. Guess what? They've been entrenched. I know Kim's new to LSU, but she was a La Tech gal and she's been down there in the South doing it. Dawn at South Carolina, Gino out there at UConn. And then you throw in some new blood, right? And amazingly talented players. Like, I know that the Lisa Leslies and the Cheryl Parkers, they were great players. You put on their tape versus Juju first year, it's just a totally different game.
Yeah.
Totally different.
The game has improved by quite a bit in the last few years, and it has really been a blast to watch. I was a little late to the party, but I'm there. I'm all there now, man. It has just been a ton of fun. All right. Coming up, Shannon Dreher is going to join us in, let's call it 15 minutes. We'll get her sense of what the heck's going on with the team and specifically where Mitch Garver is. That was supposed to be a big part of kind of changing this offense and changing the depth of this lineup. And unfortunately, he's missed 3 of the first 4 games. So we'll talk to Shannon about that and more coming up in 15. Before we get there, though, Brock cried. Was there a good reason for it? That's next on Brock and Salk.
This is Brock and Salk.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Weekdays 6 to 10.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
Oh, I like when Brock starts getting emotional over stuff. Give him his space. Kind of let him go through it all.
Bro, 3 times yesterday.
Go through his emotions.
On Easter, 3 different times. The whole Jimmy Valvano speech.
Yeah, it made you cry.
Remember Jamie said, man, what's in a great day? You laugh, you cry, you love. Like, I cried 3 different times. Cried at church like a baby. It was awesome. It's amazing.
Cried at church?
Yeah. Yesterday, Easter, just amazing day. It's the day, man. So,
cried
at church yesterday during worship and everything else. But I've learned to try not to make ugly cry face. Like Molly, not a big fan of my crying because,
she's not. Yeah. She doesn't like that.
It comes along with kind of usually ugly cry face, like this contestant, American Idol.
Yeah.
His faces were so outrageously horrible that Katie, during the tryouts, like, I can't do it. Like, I mean, your faces, I can't do it. So yesterday, he's like,
Joe Cocker.
Yeah. Oh, worse. worse. I mean, this dude's faces were horrendous. His voice was awesome. So, yeah, three different times I cried yesterday. Cried during American Idol, cried during church, and then, yes, Robbie Hummel.
But you cried during American Idol?
Yes.
What is going on with you, man?
Emotional
maybe
stories.
Need to, maybe you need to have a conversation.
No.
Church,
no.
Okay, I'll let, I'm not going to say
like
anything.
I'm not, like, sobbing soft.
And
but
this
I got, like,
story that you're going to play here, like, okay, fine. So
joy, but think about it. If you laugh, yeah, you think, and yes, you cry.
Yeah, baby.
That's
but
a
not
full
three
day.
Times.
That's a heck of a day.
Brock,
a
not three day. Times. That Jimmy, tells me you're having a problem.
It was a great day.
We
it
have a lot of advertisers on this station that can help. I am concerned based on what you've said.
Don't be.
I'm just
don't
saying,
be.
Look, church, uh-uh, fine. This story, yeah, I get it. Don't cry during American Idol. Right. That seems problematic. I don't want to hear any more about that. But this
sound
is
like some toxic male masculinity here. Yeah. You shouldn't be crying, bro.
Right.
Hold it together.
Yeah,
hey, some dirt on it.
I'm
yeah,
happy to hear you cry. You know me. I'm crying myself. Like I'm good for cry.
I
once
tend to agree with Selk here. I mean, when you're crying at American Idol, yeah, like, that's it's a little.
That's a sad
a
sign.
Much.
A little, yeah, yeah, that's a little that much. Tells me
I
you're
just
a little.
Check in and make sure you're okay.
A little overly emotional right now. Sounds like a cry for help.
I love redemption stories, and that's what Purdue is. It's a redemption story. It's been 40 years since they've been to this point with Gene Cady and his wow, great hair and everything else, and they've been up and down and they've underachieved, and poor Mike Lefko. I mean, that guy has been through the ringer for the last few decades as they've underachieved and underachieved and can't get there. Can't
Glenn
get there,
Big
can't
Dog
get there.
Robinson?
Even Glenn Big Dog couldn't get there.
Didn't make it to the Final
didn't
Four.
Make it there. Uh-uh.
But they did this year, and Robbie Hummel, who played there, was a legend there. He was pretty emotional when he saw it happen yesterday.
Well, what does this mean to you?
I'm trying not to cry. And seeing Paul
Lescu, you're failing miserably.
I know the tears are coming down. It's just been so many opportunities, whether it's the way that my knee situation happened, where we had a team that could go to the Final Four, but this is a long time coming. Matt Painter is one of the elite coaches in college basketball, and he deserves this, man. He recruits, he works hard. Man, I'm going to cry right now. I cannot believe that this has finally happened.
Yeah. You remember when I cried? Not just yesterday.
Which
remember,
time?
Remember when
which
I cried time? On the remember when I cried on the show? I don't know, what was that? A couple
no,
months ago?
I don't remember.
You
what
remember
happened?
A couple months
no,
ago when I cried?
I don't remember anything.
Seriously? Why don't you remember these things?
What did
things?
You cry about?
I'm sitting down there and me and Fresh are down there in Houston. We're at the national championship game. And the day after, I'm on Radio Row. Rick Neuheisel's next to me. Some of the Michigan clowns are a few tables down. And I didn't cry over the result of the game. I started to shed tears, Salk, because of the 265 former Husky players I got to spend 2 or 3 days with down in Houston. That's when I cried. Mm. That's when I thought about those bonds and those relationships with the Mel Millers and the Jermaine Smiths and the guys that you hadn't seen for years and years. And yesterday, as Hummel's on that call with Kevin Kugler for Westwood One, and he's sitting there at the table and he's looking at Matt Painter, who recruited him to Purdue. He knows all the stories that have been written about his coach and all the headlines and all the times falling short and how he could never win. And he gets over the top. And just like Hummel and Painter, and I think Painter goes on to say that, do you have that cut, Justin, the rest of that cut? Where the coach comes on and talks about the magnitude and the meaning of it, I know exactly what he was speaking to.
I don't know if I deserve this, but I know he does. And when you start a program and your facilities aren't very good and you get guys to come to you and commit to you, and if it wasn't for them, I wouldn't have lasted 5-6 years. And to be able to get to this and what he had to go through with his injury, it was tough, but I know this, there's not a great coach out there without great players. And Etuan Moore and Robbie Hummel and Juwan Johnson chose me and chose Purdue, and we hadn't done and I'll never forget that.
Is that what made you cry, the cursing?
It's just him crying. It's Hummel crying. It's just knowing Salk. Like, and part of it, too, was being around the UFL, which was a much better product, and a lot of guys that are out of college, you know, that are scraping by, that the $5,000 a week is a big, big deal to them. It allows them to keep their dream alive, and their employees, and they're kind of semi-pro pros. And if this is where we're going, like, if this is where all this is going to be headed, mm-hmm, because the almighty dollar is going to be the single most important thing of all, and we get to 35 teams and their employees, right, and they're getting paid and they're getting big checks, and then what happens to all the rest of the stories? What happens to the 11 seed NC State? What happens to the Purdues? What happens to these Cinderellas? What happens to these stories? Like, if we just go to a professional, semi-professional league, to me, you lose the generational bonds. That's what you hear. That's what I felt down in Houston. I seen the guys from the 70s and the 80s that we all worked through this together, that we all endured together, that the beauty of college through those years is you persevere, right? You make do with what you have. You eat peanut butter and jelly, right? You're trying to figure out how to survive and make all of this work. And there's stuff that comes. There's grit that comes from that. There's perseverance and bonds that come with that. Right. You're just not a pro, mm-hmm. you know, getting a check right out of high school and, you know, just separating the rest of that. I just hope we never get to a place where we lose sight of this.
Do you think you don't have any of that in pro sports?
You don't have it generationally like you do here. You don't. You have that locker room that's pretty special.
Right.
But you know what? The Steelers of Ben Roethlisberger aren't thinking about Mean Joe Green. They don't have a bond and a tie to those guys in the 70s that you do through sports with alumni and mm-hmm. friends, where it's deeper, right? And those deep bonds, those deep friendships that you have. And Hummel is amazing. He's a great broadcaster too, right? And he's sitting there, and I could, you know, it's different for me. People ask me, man, is it really hard? When you do that Apple Cup, was it really hard to put your rooting? Like, no. Like, it's all turned over. Like, I don't know anybody from, you know, the coaches, the eight. It all turns over. I don't mm-hmm. have but he does. That was his coach that he played for. And those are those guys that he's thinking about. And it's on the backs of so many of those previous players. That was not a cry. That was a semi.
Okay, if you say okay, so.
No, I was just holding that in.
Whatever.
Cry, 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 Grandma. I don't know, man. Part of it, again, is just being around a professional league. And if this is where we're going, and we're going to cut out the 130 teams of this, and we're going to cut out the little guy, and we're going to cut out those, you know, those underdog and those Cinderella stories and all that amazing stuff that also comes out of, you know, this time of year in sport, gosh, I hope we don't get there, man. I hope we don't kill the total golden goose.
I don't see how it will. How does that end up killing Cinderella stories? I don't see that. Like, I understand your point.
If Washington State and Oregon State can't be in the Power Five, right? I mean, does that not start to
see? But isn't part of the fun of Cinderella stories that they're not all in the Power Five?
Absolutely.
I mean, I'm not saying it's okay that Washington State and Oregon State are going away.
So what I'm saying is, what if we have 35 teams? What if we move to a 35 team and these are going to be professional, you know, colleges with employees and totally different? And, you know, I'm sorry, we're not having, we'll have intramural other sports. Maybe basketball will continue to survive, but the other ones will just be intramurals, you know, and we'll just kind of go down that road and down that route. I hate for that.
Yeah, I understand it. I think that there's two things. One, part of the world is about adapting to what's new and the way things change. And sometimes it's okay to just say, yep, that's something that's going to be lost to history. These things happen. It was a good thing in its moment, in its day. And sometimes good things are lost to history and to change. I recognize it in my own life. There are certain things from the 70s, or really the 80s and into the 90s, that I thought were great. Rock and roll music's basically lost. Right. I mean, that's something incredibly important to me. It's not a big thing anymore. Mm-hmm. It doesn't chart. There's not a lot of popular new rock. There's a lot of great rock music being made, but it's not popular anymore. And I have to just sort of accept, like, yeah, that's something that's unfortunately been lost to history. That's a bummer to me. Mm-hmm. But I have to not, like, allow that to consume me. And in this case, you know, rock is out because taste changed. In this case, all of those things you're talking about, well, I agree with everything you said. They're happening because the system that was in place was fundamentally flawed. And so until they can come up with a better replacement for it, it's kind of going to be that way.
Yeah. And I guess that's where I struggle. The better replacement right now.
No one's saying this replacement is better.
Yeah.
Just saying that the original one was flawed. And so hopefully, Brock, voices like yours, who are very important and very relevant in the college football world and college sporting world in general, hopefully you can have an effect on that. But I think it only works if you raise your hand and say, the old system didn't work. Mm-hmm. This new system isn't working either. Can we try to continue to look for something that will? That, to me, is the best play you've got. Because if you continue to stand, and I'm not saying you are, if people stand on, well, we should just go back to the way it was, that's not going to work. The way it was is dead, and for good reason. But that doesn't mean this way is okay.
I think that's very fair. And unfortunately, common sense and common ground, like so many things, is just flown out the window. And I hope it can come back in the window and salvage these things because, yeah, this tournament in particular, you know, they call it one of the greatest things in sports, one of the greatest. And it's just awesome. The storylines are incredible. Now on the men's and women's side, as we get to take all this in and we get to watch all of this, it's awesome. And common sense needs to prevail. Common ground needs to be found. And where that leadership comes from,
yeah,
it's got to come from within. I mean, it's got to come from the leaders from within, from these power conferences that are willing to be collegial, that are willing to set aside some of their own benefit for the benefit of others. And that, unfortunately, is also not happening a whole lot.
Good stuff. Good conversation. We're not done with it, obviously. This is one of those ones that just kind of keeps coming back over and over and over again. But it was a big weekend, Brock, so we're going to kind of get away from it for a little while because I want to chat with Shannon Dreher, our Mariners insider, who joins us right now. Shannon, good morning. It was just kind of it's like an up and down weekend. There were really some great positives in the pitching and the fact that they won two of the four games, two out of three over the weekend. But I think it's pretty easy also to get stuck on the negatives because they were so familiar to so many people after last season.
Yes, and you know how much I want to jump into the previous conversation, and I will not, but go, Brock, go. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's key back to the conversation I'm supposed to be in. The fan in me just came out for a second.
Because
there.
You know it, Shannon. You know it. You were in that band. You know just the fandom
we don't
is
need
different.
To go there.
The fandom is different collegially versus professionally. But okay, let's put our professional hats back on. All right.
Well,
what
it
happened,
was.
Shannon?
It was different. It needs to stay different. That's
Amen.
The issue. We
Amen.
Don't. You have pro football. You have pro basketball.
Yep.
You're losing. College football, college basketball is dying. And, you know, you've got just another league, another professional league. Okay, off the soapbox, but do what you
okay.
can.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, passion. Mariners.
I so love it. Seesaw, this is what I'm talking about. Even a trained, absolute professional like Shannon.
I'm starting to doubt that all of a sudden. What do you mean?
You start to talk about the bonds that are collegial.
What absolute professional? What professional are you talking about? I got Shannon Dreher on the line. She's not even talking about baseball. What do you mean professional?
This is serious.
Yeah. Shannon, we got important things to discuss.
Okay, Shannon, 45 strikeouts. Go. 45 strikeouts. Okay. What happened?
All right. Okay. We know it's early. Get that out of the way. We know it's four games. Get that out of the way. If you want to look at what is going on with the Mariners offensively right now, it's really easy. You look no further than the strikeouts, and then you have to look underneath the strikeouts. And what the Red Sox were throwing at the Mariners is particularly tough for anybody. They didn't see anything straight in the whole four-game series. And then off-speed got them yesterday. But if you go down into the numbers and you look at the out-of-zone swings, you see the Mariners are 10th lowest out-of-zone swings in the four games, which is no sort of sample. It's just, you know, a start. Mm-hmm. And that's encouraging. That's encouraging. And you look at the bigger numbers, and I can say with almost complete confidence that, you know, Jorge Polanco is not going to strike out at 47%, at a 47% rate this year. He's never done that. It's not going to happen this year. He typically is about half of that. And you've got other players that are in that same boat right now. You're looking at kind of a rough start. Guys are getting a little swing happy early. But, you know, Luis Urias is not going to strike out in 50% of his at-bats. Dom Canzone is not going to. Luis Urias' strikeout rate, you know, for his career is 21. Canzone's is 18. Mm-hmm. Polanco's is 18. They are getting into their season right now. They're adjusting their eyes. They are adjusting their heartbeats probably at some point. And it's on the coaching staff really to stay on them right now. And let them get to a good place and continue doing some of the things that they were doing in spring training. But most importantly, at this point, it's kind of get back to themselves.
Shannon Dreher here with us. One of my buddies, Tyler Palumbas, has a segment on his radio show called No Dumb Questions. And I think I might steal it because every once in a while I'm like, gosh, I shouldn't ask this question. Maybe me look even dumber than I am, but I'm going to ask it anyway. We were talking about this off the air before the show, Shannon, does, you know, some of the air off the water and just the heavier air, and I know it was beautiful and it wasn't particularly cold, the marine layer wasn't particularly prevalent, but I don't hear that talked about as much when it comes to helping spin. I know down in that dry air in Arizona, you hear all these pitchers talk about it is harder, you know, with the curveballs and everything else. You just don't, you know, get as much quality spin. Is, you know, T-Mobile a place where it actually off the water, like San Francisco, is enhanced and that spin is becomes that much more difficult to hit?
Well, I think it's going to be a little bit heavier. You're going to see things drop a little bit more. I'm not sure about that. I'm not a scientist. I have not studied what the effect, to be honest with you, is. But the fact of the matter was, and we saw this sometimes last year, we saw this actually a lot last year. I don't know well enough what the Boston Red Sox game plan is this year, but I think that you do look at the Mariners over the last couple of years and you did see teams flipping usage when they go into parks. And I don't know if teams are going to do that at the very beginning. All we know is that they saw a lot of it. The Red Sox are capable of doing that, and the Mariners are swinging at it way too much this weekend.
How's Mitch Garver?
You hope he is okay. I mean, this is one of the ones where the only thing that we can do is ask about it. And when we first heard about it, it was a late scratch. You know, he thought he would be good to go on Friday, and then they felt pretty good about it by the end of the night. Shouldn't be out for more than a day or two. The next day, that morning, he talked to Scott Servais and thought possibly he could go, and it was a let's give him another day situation, and the next thing you know, he's out on Sunday. So I don't know. If he's not in the lineup today, then I think you get concerned, and then you start thinking about, you know, is this a situation where you have to retroactive IL with him? We really don't know. It was kind of a surprise to see that. But again, you know, there are adjustments that you make when you come from Arizona and the cold up to Seattle, and you can see how these things can happen. Unfortunately, you get concerned about it because of the injury history there.
Back tightness, back spasms, is that what they're saying?
Back spasms.
Okay. And that wasn't something he's battled in the past, correct? He's had a litany of some other injuries, but he's not a guy that's had a chronic back issue over his years, right?
No.
Okay.
And he was fine in spring training. We didn't see a hint of it.
I'm just going to blame travel. I'm going to blame, you know, from Phoenix, Arizona.
Well, then he should be fine because there's not a lot of travel here when you get to be on the Mariners.
Well, they had to go to San Diego and then they come up here.
Not a ton of travel planes for this franchise.
Yeah, I'm going to blame travel.
Shouldn't be an issue moving forward. Shannon, how great was Saturday night and Julio with his first walk-off as a professional?
Oh, it was fantastic. And I think you've heard how excited Scott's been about Julio and the swing decisions that he's making, that, you know, what that can do for him. But just that situation, and finally, and you were hoping that perhaps that would turn into something the next day, because it really showed, and something they're really trying to reinforce, is just put the ball in play and things can happen. They haven't been able to put the ball in play. That's been the biggest issue so far. But to see Julio in two different nights come up in two different big situations and to come through in both big situations, one with a walk and not stopping things and giving the ability for the inning to go on when they need to run late, and two, to come up finally. This is something he's talked about quite a bit, something he will drop into conversations every now and then. I still don't have my first walk-off hit. And you think Julio Rodriguez, oh, it should be a big dramatic home run or whatever. He doesn't care. And that's all they needed is what he did at that point. So he was very excited. His teammates were very excited for him as well.
You were out there on the field, I assume, afterwards on Saturday?
Yes.
Why was he so wet? Like, I've seen players get, you know, wet after their...
Shannon, you ever been drenched?
Shannon, he was soaked. He looked like he'd gone swimming. What was the problem?
I think there were two. I think he got two Gatorade. He got one out on the field, I think. And I know that JP came and got him. And when JP was running by, I heard that was the second. So I don't know exactly when the first was, but they got him a couple of times. And maybe it's the new uniforms. Maybe they just look that way.
Oh, the new uniforms that didn't make it here. What is that? Did you hear that? They didn't wear the cream. They didn't wear the creams yesterday because they haven't arrived yet.
What?
Oh, yeah. No, I've heard that. That's a problem around baseball. That's been a problem for the last couple of years, actually. Not all uniforms making it on time.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, because who could have predicted they'd need them?
What a mess. Hey, Shannon, any update? And I know you guys get the skipper every day, and now we're into games and into this mode. But any update on Brash and Santos and kind of their prospects towards getting
on that
healthy?
List as well.
Yeah, you know what? I actually asked for one on Saturday and didn't get it. And it doesn't sound like I was off yesterday. It just doesn't sound like they got it yesterday. So I am going to definitely ask again today. And if I don't get it, then I'll start finding other ways to get it. When we left spring training, everything looked fine. Brash was on starting up like a regular throwing program. He did get up on the mound one time before we left, which was good. And the thing that I'm most curious about is last Thursday, Santos was to have an MRI that would determine if he could begin throwing again. So just because we haven't heard anything doesn't mean that that hasn't happened. It just, there's kind of a tendency at the big league level, if they're not here helping the club right now, then there's not much knowledge about it, or at least not that's going to be put out with it by the manager. And now we have to go through the general manager to get injury updates, which is a shift over the last couple of years that hasn't been so great. So one way or another, we'll track that down tonight.
Shannon, great stuff as always. No rest. They come right out here with seven straight games to start. So they will play tonight, get our first view at Emerson Hancock, and see if they can put some of the early narrative of their offensive struggles and these 45 strikeouts in four games behind them. Shannon, appreciate it always. Talk to you soon.
You got it, guys.
All right, there you go. There's Shannon Dreyer, and she has your back, Brock. How do you like that?
Oh, she's such a pro. But, again, you'd start talking college, and you get Robbie Hummel balling like a baby on the sidelines. You get yours truly, you know, welling up with emotion, and because there's just a lot of pent-up emotion in there, Salky. But I got something for you, man. I got some. I am so excited about my draft profile.
There's going to be some crying in the Salk House tonight. I think Iowa's not going to win this game, and I think there's a lot of pressure on Caitlin Clark. She's starting to feel it. This LSU team is a little more physical. The inside, like her big
people. I will say though, I think being outside of their arena, getting away from that environment, it helped the other day. Colorado was playing great.
I know
Colorado had, and they just dismantled them.
I got a concern, and I don't know whether Cecily's going to make it through that without some big emotions. You got somebody good today?
I do. I think all the way leading up here, I'm looking at my list, and I've had a blast so far. And again, these are not who the Seahawks are going to take at number 16. These are guys that I've come across over my years. You know that I'm privy to a couple programs, right? And certainly this year, Michigan and Washington, I would add to that list. They had 31 guys between those two programs at the combine.
Utah and Penn State are two programs that you usually like. Kansas State's another.
Yeah,
those three, Utah, Penn State, and Kansas State. So I'm going to assume today's draft profiles from one of those three schools. That's next on Brock and Salk.